Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
Thank you for joining us today here at the Business Growth Cafe. I am Angelo Ponzi, your host. Each week, we select from a menu of topics that can impact business growth to discuss with experts from a wide variety of disciplines. And today in the cafe, I'm excited to have Richard Franzi, founder and CEO of Critical Mass for Business. Critical Mass is a premium social peer learning firm that works with CEOs and their executive team to get the benefits of peer learning and to help keep their businesses growing strong. Richard is also an author of 4 books, and your latest book, Killing Cats Leads to Rats, which I'm excited to talk about a little later in the show. Richard, I'm happy to have you on the show to discuss business growth strategies for small to medium-sized businesses. Welcome.
Thank you, Angelo. It's good to be here. And just one point of correction, I've written 3 books.
Oh, you must be writing
them. I'm working on my 4th book.
All right. Well, you know, I get excited when I start thinking about that. So, hopefully that'll be out soon.
Yes.
I know Killing Cats Leads to Rats is doing well, and it's a great. I've seen you give the presentation a few times, and it gets better and better every time I see it, and we're going to have some discussion about that later in
great.
The show.
Good.
So why don't we take a few minutes, because some of my listeners may not actually listen to your show. By the way, he is an author, another radio show host here on octalkradio.net. A little later today, you have your show Critical Mass for Business. But why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and what you do that helps businesses grow?
Right. I build mastermind groups here in Southern California for middle market CEOs and business owners. I've been doing that for 11 years because I was in a CEO peer group when I was the president and general manager of a company called Delphi Connection Systems. Got so much value in that process that I had an epiphany one day at one of the retreats, and I thought, you know what, my next chapter, I want to do what this gentleman's doing, Bob Graybill. I want to lead and facilitate these CEO peer groups. I don't really want to go back and run the manufacturing company that I was responsible for. So about 6 months later, I made the change in my career, and I've been an entrepreneur ever since.
That's fantastic. As a fellow entrepreneur, I know that's always exciting. Of course, the ups and the downs of business growth and strategies, and we're actually going to talk about some of that today. You know, like you said, you focus on executive peer groups, and one of the things I really want to talk about is strategies for growth. And okay. I think you told me this in a meeting not too long ago. I think it was McKinsey that said that from a research study, the CEOs were spending about an average of 3 hours a month on their planning and thinking about their business, working on it versus in it. And I recently finished a little qualitative study with some CEOs, and they said they spent an average of less than 10% of their time thinking about their business. So obviously this is potentially a problem for long-term growth. So based on these behaviors and your experience working with all these folks, what are some of the pitfalls that you have found with this kind of behavior?
Yeah, that research is actually in my Killing Cats Leads to Rats book, okay. And it's a part of the talk that I give as well. The research was of 187 middle market CEOs, and they reported they spent less than 3 hours a month thinking about their company's future. I think it goes back to what Stephen Covey said, which is working on the urgent, which is working in your business, versus working on the important, which is working on your business. Part of the challenge is there's no one knocking on the door of the business owner or CEO saying, hey, we need to think about us in 3 years, boss, or 5 years. But there are certainly people knocking on the CEO's door saying, hey, I got a customer, they're upset, the product didn't come in. And working in the business is very easy to get pulled into because there's a lot to do when you're running a middle market company. The leaders are so close to the business, it's hard to pull themselves away from that.
Right. Well, it's almost like that day-to-day, and then Covey is a great example of being more reactionary than being proactive and really thinking long-term. I mean, getting people to think just a few months out, not counting a year out or even 3 to 5 years out, that's it's a challenge. We recently gave a presentation, actually, to one of your groups, mm-hmm. and we talked about planning and how difficult it is to... It's easy to think about the planning aspect that's very difficult for implementation, and that's where a lot of people's go awry. So if we think about guidelines, if you will, and what we're talking about, what are 3 or 5 tips that you give the people that you work with about planning for growth?
Well, and I talk about it in the book, and I don't keep meaning to bring back the book, but this is a perfect topic that's contained in Killing Cats Leads to Rats, which is now available as an Audible download in addition to the Kindle and
you didn't ask me to read for you, so I'm a little disappointed.
I hired a professional, but I'm sure you would have done a great job, Angelo. Sorry, didn't know you wanted to do that. The first thing is, you have to give yourself enough time before you make a strategic decision to deliberate. If you put it off because the urgent keeps jumping in front of the important, but you still have a deadline to make a decision for a strategic initiative, you don't give yourself the time to properly deliberate, and you allow emotion to creep in because now you're feeling a bit claustrophobic because mm-hmm. the deadline is coming. So best practice number one, give yourself ample time before a strategic decision must be made to do the right things of deliberation and consideration. The second point is to make sure there's time on your calendar, even if you don't have a strategic decision that's required, to think about your company's future. It is that quiet time. I just left one of my clients who shared with me a 3-year plan they're developing for the front end of their business. And it's something they've not done before, he told me. This is a new venture for them. But the idea that not only is he working on it, but the key leaders of his company are working on it and buying into it, it gives him confidence that they're going to be able to grow their business because they're working a plan mm-hmm. versus reacting to the market.
Right, right, right. Do you think kind of a simple tip is literally schedule every month time to work on your business?
Yeah, and don't let other people take it off your calendar. It is that one. It's the same thing I say about attending a CEO peer group. This is your time to work on your business. It is that strategic time that you can't give up for something that's tactical. Now, there's always business issues that may prevent members from attending, and on occasion they do not attend. But it's the time to get away from the run-of-the-mill everyday routine and think and open your mind and allow perspectives to come in that can help you to, in this day and age, when you're running a business, especially a middle market company, you have to constantly be looking at the next 3 to 5 years because things are changing so fast. What you did a year ago or 2 years ago may not be relevant even this year, let alone into the future.
Right. And certainly with technology, that really propels that rapidness, if you will. And I know AI is breathing down everybody's neck as far as what's going to happen in the future is regarding jobs. And I really think that's part of any strategic initiative. In an innovation program, that businesses really need to carve out additional time to think about innovation, how they can change or react or be proactive, if you will, on those kinds of changes that could have an impact on their employees, on their markets, and on their growth.
I think the most valuable real estate in any company is the space between the right ear and the left ear of the leader of the company. Yeah. Because if that terrain isn't right, I don't know how the rest of the terrain over time is right. But if that terrain is right between their two ears, if they're thinking correctly, rather than fearing AI, how do you adopt AI in a way that is meaningful to your customers that differentiates you and disintermediates somebody else?
Right. And, you know, one of the things that I always look at, and that's being customer focused, having a customer centric strategy. And part of that is going out and actually talking to your customer and trying to understand these different impacts as opposed to working in a vacuum. Because sometimes that space between the left ear and the right ear becomes a little empty if they're just kind of working on gut feel
right.
versus really getting true market intelligence to help lay that foundation. And I think that with these changes that are coming along, you know, I think that I encourage the listeners to really think about how do they get that voice of their customer really factored in, because then we're serving their needs, wants versus our needs and wants as a business.
I agree.
Okay. Let's talk about one of your three books, right? Guiding Principles, I think was your first book or your second book?
It was my second book.
Second book. Okay. And in there, you say that executives bring their personal beliefs and philosophies, business philosophies, to the foundation of their business. Mm-hmm. I always look at it when I think about brand personalities, especially in small to medium-sized businesses. Typically, the personality of the brand is the personality of the owner, right? So let's explore one of those guiding principles, and that's strategic principles.
Mm-hmm.
So how does this executive create and implement the strategic principles to help them ensure about business growth?
So when we started putting the book together, it really came from this very studio where I would ask, and I still do, guests, if it's appropriate, tell me about your guiding principle, your overarching philosophy for how you're building the culture of your company.
Okay.
And frankly, when I started asking that question all those years ago, I wasn't sure what the answers would be like and if they were, how insightful they would be. But I quickly learned they weren't rote, they weren't things that you would read on the wall. They were actually the individual's personal beliefs that drive their decisions that they make in the business. So we did, a release of about 70 interviews that we put in the Guiding Principle book. Since then, I've done two updates to it to add, and now there's 130 in different categories, whether it be customer or employee or strategic. And what I found is it was the context on which many times the culture of their company is built. And so taking the answer to the question and formatting it so that people could read it and then putting it into the book, I realized many of the responses sat in a way that was more outside of the business, that they were more outside focused than inside focused. So when they were employee focused and their guiding principle, they fell into the employee chapter. But those answers that I felt were more externally aware, were more looking to the future of the company and the business, I felt belonged in a chapter we called strategy or strategic, which allowed people to be thinking not just about today's business, but the long-term viability of their company, why they started it. Some of the people who we interviewed on this radio station and put into the book actually told me they went back and they spoke to their guiding principle to their employees. They had never really, unlike a mission, vision, they had never really taken that step. And they thought, well, you know, now that I've had to answer it for Rick on Critical Mass Radio Show, I think I ought to bring this back into the business. And so for them, it was very helpful to reinforce the culture.
Right. Do they find it, those that are implementing it, updating it on a regular basis? I mean, you know, people write their mission, their vision, and they tend to, you know, put it in a binder, stick it on the wall, and they don't very often revisit it until someone like myself comes in and starts making them think about it. But I think that these kinds of principles, you know, they're living, they're fluid, and I think they have to adjust a bit as the market changes and the positioning and things that they're doing out in the marketplace.
Okay, so that's logical. What I learned is that it's what the leader brings with them when they show up. And so even when they built a second company, that guiding principle translated. It was sort of, on one hand, you have to be relevant and keep it current. But on the other hand, it is your anchor, your mooring that you use to withstand the wind. And that's why I saw it so directly tied to culture. Because the companies that I work with, which are middle market companies, the leader, especially if the leader is a founder, has a disproportionate influence on the culture of the business.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're very actively involved. I was just at a retreat this weekend speaking, giving my Killing Cats, Leads the Rats keynote, and the topic of Cal Worthington came up.
Oh, wow.
And if you've lived in California, you know Cal.
You know Cal.
And his whole my dog Spot thing.
Right.
But there was a culture around Cal's business, whether you went into a dealership in Long Beach or apparently you went into one in Sacramento. He was able to have the same guiding principle about how the business was going to be built, even though he wasn't in the remote locations as frequently as in a local location.
Okay. All right. Good. So let's move on to Killing Cats Leads to Rats, and it's a great title. I've mentioned this before, and for those listening, a little bit of a history lesson, so I encourage you to pick up the book so you understand the foundation for unintended consequences of business decisions, and I'm sure Rick will tell you how to buy that at the end of the show. It seems like many of the examples in your book are bigger brands. We talk about Wells Fargo, Volkswagen, things like that. In your experiences in working with these small to medium-sized businesses, can you, those that have maybe have stumbled, got off the road to growth, so to speak, and because of their decision-making, you have some examples that really push it down into that small to medium size?
Well, in the book, we have countless examples in the talk built on that, and I'm updating it with technology for an AI presentation, unintended consequences of artificial intelligence. And then we have versions of the talk that set specifically for different industries, healthcare and transportation.
So more verticalization.
More verticalization in the presentation. The message is the same. The examples are different.
Okay.
And people learn by stories.
Right.
I think I've heard you say that.
I am. I have an ebook on my website about storytelling.
And so most of the talk and most of the book, if you've read it, is really telling it through stories because we learn best and we can remember best from that. The challenge that I have is making sure that everything that we've written about, because unfortunately the negative effects of unintended consequences in the book are unpleasant to the company or to the individual.
Exactly.
And so they've had to be public companies or large companies where I could find independent writings about them. What I'm looking for today as we're building The Field Guide, which is our fourth book, which will complement Killing Cats Leads the Rats, are the positive aspects of controlling unintended consequences from middle market companies that are employing the secure model, which is the IP that's in the book, about how to avoid, reduce, or mitigate unintended consequences. So I'm actively looking for positive stories of middle market companies who've adopted some aspect of the secure model and are seeing an improvement in the quality of the decisions that they're making.
And I would assume certainly that a lot of the stories are public companies because you have access to that information versus privately held medium-sized companies.
Right. The closest I would say I would come is Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart was a successful in the 90s. Her name was synonymous with elegance and home decor. She was, you know, people would not entertain without sort of leaning on Martha's word and advice. And when she took her private company public in 1996, she became a billionaire off of the stock that she retained in the sale of the company, Martha Stewart Living, Omni Media. She's in the book not because of that success, unfortunately. She's in the book because her leadership style was not one of collaboration and delegation. It was one of extreme micromanagement, which led to, and this is public information, many of the ex-employees, including executives, claiming they had a difficult time working in that environment. And so I don't mean to single out Ms. Stewart. She's very successful. She's redone her career quite well. She's obviously a good leader now and someone who's a successful entrepreneur. But the lesson learned there is that you need to be able to empower your teams to help you to grow your company and stay focused on the future.
Okay. All right. Excellent. In the book, you mentioned this about your six-step secure model, mitigating unintended consequences. They are, I'm going to read them, slow down the process, expand your knowledge, clarify the desired outcome, unify the team, retain control, ensure you stay outcome focused. Those are six. Let's talk about three of them. I think we still have time for that.
Okay.
Maybe you take the three I'll read in priority in case we run out of time and I start getting waved over there by Paul, our engineer. So the ones I picked are slow down the process, clarify the desired outcome, and ensure you stay outcome focused. So which one should we talk about first?
Well, I think earlier in the interview we covered slow down the decision process. When I encounter people who've read the book or during the keynotes or the workshops that I lead, people react most to this one because they're saying, in a world of minimal viable products, Rick, where I have to make increasingly quick decisions, I slowing down the decision-making process is counterintuitive to me. What do you mean? The overarching message there, and we have in the book and in the talk, how to do that, is to reduce or diminish the impact of emotion on your strategic decisions. Making decisions based on fact and research rather than instinct, emotion, and past experience, because the past isn't always a good guide to the future. You really need to be, to what you said earlier, talking to your clients, reading the marketplace, doing research, getting data that tells you that your instincts are valid or that you need to modify them. So slowing down the decision-making process really means taking emotion out of it and basing your strategic decisions on what Dr. Daniel Kahneman says, the slow-thinking part of your brain, the more deliberative part of your brain.
Okay. Okay. What about clarify the desired outcome?
Yeah, the example in the book and the talk that I give is Wells Fargo and the problems that they ran into in their retail banking division, where they created fraud, opened up 2 million fake accounts for clients who had no knowledge, nor did they approve that. And when that became known, that was significantly negative for the brand of Wells Fargo that today they're still recovering from. The word that we say there is, when you bring your strategy to your teams who are going to implement, you must be very thoughtful as the leaders of organizations to clearly explain the outcome that you want, why, and the actions that the employees are to take to achieve that. Because the first question that any employee is going to have when they hear about a change or a new direction is, how does this affect me? Am I okay? What do you want me to do? And if you don't give them that, then even the well-intended, because these are unintended consequences, even the well-intended employee can lead you in the wrong direction. And I believe that's part of the problem of what may have happened at Wells Fargo in our retail banking division. There was such a focus on cross-selling as many products to the same customer as possible that when the employees realized they couldn't do it by normal means, they had to resort to other means such as fraud to meet those objectives.
Right. I find that many times in dealing with various companies, they tend to forget the employees when they're putting together their outward marketing programs. And that's where the focus is. And then find out that the employees didn't buy into it or didn't know anything about it. Years ago, we're working on the conversion, if you remember a long time ago, Burlington Air Express, right, when they were converting to a freight forward program. And so we worked for months on this campaign and everything was great. We did not market it internally the way we probably should have. And when the campaign launched, we discovered that somebody over in accounting had been looking at sheets and saw that there was a bunch of 800 numbers that had not been used in a very long time and had canceled them just a couple days earlier. So, you know, that aspect of just not educating the people and getting that buy-in, I certainly understand that, and having those employees really behind that decision and really understand their clarity and their focus makes it extremely important, which I think leads me to the last one, which is ensure you stay outcome-focused.
Right, and this one, so the secure model, the slow down the decision process and expand your knowledge really talks about the leadership team in the deliberation and the preparation for the strategy for the growth. The next four, the clarify, unify, retain control, and ensure you stay outcome-focused, really looks at the actual implementation of the strategy, which is where unintended consequences come from. Right. They come from the purposeful action of people attempting to achieve what you told them you want them to get as their leader. And so it's really important that we spend a lot of time on the implementation phase. The end is ensure you stay outcome-focused, because once you've rolled out your strategy, two things. One, you have to make sure that in that strategy, you're achieving the goal that you wanted. The story that we use in the talk and in the workshops is Volkswagen. Volkswagen's goal was to become the number one automotive company in the world and overtake Toyota. At the same time, they were being told that one of their most popular engines, a 2.0 diesel liter engine, was too dirty to be sold in the United States with new EPA regulations. Well, they wanted to serve the growth factor more than the risk of doing something to sell an engine that wouldn't pass the EPA. They achieved the goal of getting more sales, but they're caught now in a major problem called Dieselgate, which is causing a lot of people to lose their jobs. Actually, executives in Volkswagen to be imprisoned because of this, and they've paid $35 billion in fines to the U.S. alone for this selling of this engine and making it look cleaner than it was. This whole, so if you own a clean diesel engine from Volkswagen, you probably know very much what I'm talking about, which are the issues they've had over the past few years.
Well, that's certainly not pocket change, that fine.
Right, and that's just for the U.S., where they sold 500,000 vehicles. They have many more of those around the world.
Okay. Well, I'm getting some fingers pointed at me over here a little bit, so we are starting to wrap this up. So okay. I have two more questions. First one, if we could sum up 3 to 5 tips and suggestions for the listeners to help them stay on track to help their businesses continue to grow.
Right.
What might those be?
Well, I think first one is what we've talked about already. And as the leader of an organization, you are the guardian of the future for your company, regardless of how many people are on your staff. At the end of the day, the title chief executive officer, if that's what you carry, or managing partner or president or whatever that top tier leadership is, you're as much about tomorrow as you are today. And in some ways, you're probably more responsible for the future, for what happens to your company, maybe even after you're no longer there. You owe that to the employees that are working hard to create the value and deliver the services. So my first suggestion as best practice is make sure you're allocating enough time to deal with your company's future so that when you get there, you're not surprised by what you find.
Okay, I'm going to take just that one because I'm really running out of time, it looks like. But I have to ask you a question. So we both run small businesses. So when you think about growing your business, what keeps you up at night?
What keeps me up at night is keeping the service that I'm delivering viable to my current customers. You probably, and many small businesses and entrepreneurs, experience that your customers, when they first experience your brand, may be amazed by your products and services, but after a few years, they may begin to take it for granted or forget how impactful it has been to them. So you must constantly stay relevant in your client's mind by doing new things or better things and learning yourself. And the other thing that keeps me up at night, frankly, is the ability to bring in enough new clients to achieve my desired goals. I have pretty aggressive goals for the business, and it requires a pretty heavy pipeline for that.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Richard, how can our listeners contact you? Website, email, all those good stuff?
Yeah. If they want to buy the book, I'm going to direct them to any major book reseller. Obviously, Amazon.com has all the different formats that I have available. If they want to connect with me, I'd ask them to go to my LinkedIn profile. I'm okay. Richard Franzi, Franzi. That'd be the best way to connect.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thanks again for joining us in the cafe. You can find out more about me and read my blogs at The Ponzi Group at theponzigroup.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn, also Facebook as well. And you can subscribe to our show at businessgrowthcafe.com. And coming soon to platforms such as Stitcher, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, iTunes, and many other platforms around the world. Join me again next week at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.